Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go any further, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on whose land we are broadcasting from. I would like to acknowledge the Yuggera and the Turrbal peoples. I also would like to acknowledge our elders and also our elders of more recent arrivals. You are listening to Let's Talk. My guest on the show this morning is a very, very deadly outspoken sister by the name of Nayuka Gori. She's still making her way here. So what we're going to do is go to a quick song break. And then by the time that's over, we'll be back here on Let's Talk.
Let's Talk.
And you're back tuning into 98.9 FM. I'm your host, Bo Spearum. My guest in the studio, the very, very deadly Noika Gori. Just before we start, could I get you to tell us your name, your mob, and where you're from?
Hello everyone. My name's Nayuka. I'm a Gunai Konai Gunajmara Rajari and Yorta Yorta woman. I was living in Nam down in Melbourne, and I'm here up in Mianjin, Brisbane, for the last couple of months.
Deadly, deadly. Would you call yourself? How would you describe yourself?
I guess a writer. Yeah. Writer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a few years ago, you wrote a deadly article against constitutional recognition and calling for treating. Did that sort of push you into like sort of a spotlight within younger Aboriginal people, but then also, you know, the more broader public within Australia?
Yeah, definitely. I wrote that piece in maybe February, March last year. I've just been, it's sort of weird. I think people often think like any black fellow who has a platform can suddenly talk on behalf of everything, which just obviously isn't the case. But, yeah, kind of in a position where can sort of write about the things that I'm interested in or things that things make me angry. But we live in a time where we've got such amazing writers and so many more coming through as well. And obviously stand on the shoulders of giants, I think the saying is.
And how long have you been writing for?
Getting published for the last year and a half, and would often write things but too ashamed to do anything with it. Loved writing at school and would, write bits and pieces here or there but just sort of keep it to myself. I think there's such an appetite out there and mob love to hear. We love to support our own mob, so, it's learning that it's okay to put your voice out there and it's okay to change your mind or take grow and that sort of thing.
And in your intro you just mentioned, about four or five different, nations that you belong to. I was very fortunate enough at the start of 2015 to visit Gunai Kurnai country down in Gippsland and went to the mission. Very, very beautiful place that was. Could you tell us a bit about, where you're from and, tell us your story, paint the picture for our listeners.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a common story, I don't know, but, so Mum had me kind of young. She's a Gunai Kurnai woman, and kind of grew up in Gippsland for the first couple of years and, definitely spent a lot of my great-grandparents and grandfather from Bangyana, which is, I think, the mission you Lectars mission you went to. So was often around there, but because of like family violence and that sort of stuff, we kind of moved up here and Mum married a Gurang Gurang man. So we have a lot of Gurang Gurang family. Shout out to the Johnsons up in Bundy. So they're all our like family too. Grew up here in Queensland, so around Bundy and then Billawheela, then Brisbane. And then finally I think like a lot of other mob probably feel it was sort of my grandparents are getting old back down in Melbourne, so thought it was time to move back down. So 6 years ago now, 6 or 7 years ago, I moved down to be closer to country. Be closer to my family and get to know that some parts of my family that I missed out on growing up because of what had happened. So was down in Melbourne doing stuff. Have a lot of staunch family down there as well, which is really cool. Then came back here for love.
As it goes.
Everyone knows,
like you mentioned, staunch family, you have the synonymous family, the Thorpes that are tied in with, the Gunai Kurnai, and then you said Rajari, you have very, very strong, families there, the co-family. Is, And also in your intro, you said, like we stand on the shoulders of giants. You know, so is that sort of where you draw, you know, a lot of your strength and, you know, your writings from?
Yeah, definitely. I've recently started exploring my great-grandmother because I always knew her and, like, I was lucky enough to have met her and spent some time with her as a kid, my great-grandmother Linda Gorrie. And just some of those, and then also grew up with mum's stories as well, my grandfather's stories and uncle's, just some of those, like, what we consider brave now, I often think about my great-grandmother and think, no, that was bravery. Like, it's not, you know, she was like a black woman who, she was stolen, and just reading that even as a kid, she, in her case file notes, they'll say she was very sensitive about race, which means even as a little black girl, she was sticking up for herself. Like, that's bravery. I mean, yeah, so I think, like, and then she was also really rebellious as well. So I'm thinking, what does it mean to be a young black woman in 2017 and truly rebel? What does rebellion look like? And what she was doing wasn't socially acceptable, but I feel like there's more acceptability now. So is it true rebellion if it's acceptable? Probably not. But, yeah, definitely draw. And then also on my owner's side as well, really strong women on that side, as I'm sure you know. So, like, and that's the cool thing. Like, you could talk to any other black fella and they've got similar stories of staunch family. But, yeah, definitely... Yeah, particularly the women in my family, I draw a lot of strength from.
And that's sort of missed in the narrative of Indigenous resistance, is, I guess, the strength, but then also the toll that, you know, Aboriginal women or Indigenous women in general had to take. Do you think, like, that's left out in that whole story? In our story?
Yeah, I think... I think even war, was it last year, made a status about, because when people hit war up, they're often like, hey, bros.
Yeah.
And I think war made a status about, like, actually there's a lot of women involved.
Mm.
I think it's, I think people, the way that we imagine it, it might be a Western construct. Mm-hmm. We imagine like freedom fighting to be the domain of men,
mm-hmm.
which we know isn't mm-hmm. true. And we know that women, like, I think it was your sister in her play that I watched last year. I think she said, like, Gomorrah women fight.
Mm.
So it's like, yeah, something, maybe it's the Western way that we imagine stuff. We leave out women in that, but we know we're fighters.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
We wouldn't be anywhere without women.
Of course. What Meryl, like, we have this story, the Gomorrah 500. And there's like about 2000 major none. He got sent from Sydney to come up, you know, to sort of, clear the land of the blacks before the expansion, you know, into our country and stuff. And as these soldiers were, you know, like marching in on their horses, they heard, you know, this like rumbling in the back, you know, in the distance. Then as they got further, they sort of saw the dust, you know, flying up and the sound got louder and you know, they thought it was thunder, you know, and, at the forefront, yeah, you know, was Gomorrah women, you know, chanting with their yam sticks and their digging sticks and the men behind them. But, yeah, the women, our women, like, they, you know, they took the first blow for the nation. Hopefully, you know, we get to see, I get to go down there and see Meryl's play when she gets it back on, because I heard it was really, really good.
Oh, you haven't seen it yet?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
I actually, when I was down in Melbourne, early last year, I got to see the unedited scripted version. Like, we just sat down in Ilbidger, I think it was, the theater down there, and her and, some other aunties were going through the play and stuff. And I was like, whoa, this is like pretty hectic. But it was only like half an hour. So she still had to add heaps more into it, but no, it was really, really deadly. You know, I'm very fortunate enough. Yeah, you know, to sort of see that side before, you know, the whole production side of it.
Yeah, it was incredible. I went with my cousin and Arnie, and we were like in tears. She's such a powerful performer. And the thing that I loved about it is that she tells the story of colonization. We imagine colonization as like this historic one event, but she weaves she makes it one, like it's a story, in my mind anyway, makes it this one continual life story, which is perhaps the way that we should see it. Mm. And when you witness it like that, and it's such a like fresh kind of take on it, it makes you realize things about the way that the world is, which is like what art, yeah, when art is like really good, often does. Anyway, she's brilliant. Check it out if you ever get a chance.
definitely. You know, I like art, you know, has played a massive part, you know, in, you know, all forms of, all, you know, like progressive societies and stuff, you know, especially, you know, with like marginalized communities like ourselves, you know, when you think back to, you know, like the 70s and the 60s, you know, those like black theaters, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of pushed, you know, our narrative into sort of, you know, a different, you know, circle that, you know, wouldn't necessarily, you know, these people would not necessarily be, you know, inclined to go to like a march or a protest to see an angry black fella, but, you know, like they would go to things like, you know, plays and theatre events.
That's so true. Mm. And I think also, like, even think about NWA, like when they said, I don't know if we're not allowed to swear, right?
Nah.
F the police.
Yeah.
Like, think about how many black people have wanted to scream that out, and then they put it in a song and suddenly people had the, like, yeah, their rage was on the radio or, well, sometimes often it was banned. But, like, yeah, when you can articulate the rage and, like, suddenly it's, yeah, this thing that you can sing or chant, yeah, there's a lot of power in that. And also, yeah, there's something about making something art. When it's art, it's in a different, it's kind of in a different realm, so it gets critiqued differently.
And
artists can get away with saying things that you couldn't just write, you know, if you were writing or whatever. We need artists for sure.
Totally. You know, I think, you know, like, you know, on all fronts to have any kind of successful movement, you know, like you need, you know, like obviously you need the people on the street, like you need like academics, you need, you know, theatres, you need writers, you know, to cover, you know, a lot of bases.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, like on that, you know, like that NWA song, you know, it said F the police, you know, I was like subconsciously or consciously knowing, you know, like they were articulating their oppression. Which sort of brings me to like my next question. When I was in Newcastle, early this year, there was a talk, about, you know, young fellas, in prisons and stuff. And like they asked me just to jump on because the other speakers couldn't make it. And, you know, I wanted to make it a thing to say that, you know, like I think we should stop, you know, calling our young fellas criminals, you know, giving him, you know, like you give anybody a tagline nowadays, you know, they're going to, you know, try and live up to it or, you know, like honor it.
Like label theory.
Label. Yeah. You know, and, you know, like you give them, you call them something else or, you know, like, they'll be that, you know, like you look at, and like the way I see it is, you know, like you look at the expansion of any colony around the world, you know, they always went for the young fellas, you know, and it was always the young fellas, you know, that, you know, cause like, you know, a lot of settler, you know, damage to whether it was cattle, crops, you know, the housing and stuff, you know, and in some way, you know, like, you know, I see that as well, you know, today, whether they're, you know, stealing cars, you know, breaking property, breaking in, you know, they're causing, you know, like, you know, like whether they realize it or not, you know, they're articulating, you know, you know, their oppression, you know, in the best way possible, you know, and we, and our own mob, we tend to sort of, you know, hey, don't do that there, that's wrong. You know, and I think, you know, like we really need to look at how we, look at our young fellas, you know, because back then, you know, them old fellas said, you know, like that was an act of a worry, you know, like what you're doing, you know, that was, you know, there was responsibility, you know, and, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. When we look in the past, we're probably, you know, if people took out some sheep because the sheep or cows because, you know, they're hoofed animals and were destroying our country, that was like an act of bravery or whatever. But we don't, it's like, yeah, we've like assimilated into that way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, you're right. It's the same crimes of the property.
Yeah.
you know, for which we would have been shot, and now we get run over.
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah, it's almost exactly the same. But we take on their narratives and we take on their way of thinking and shun our young people for doing it or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that whole, like, conversation, you know, around rehabilitating young fellas, you know, should be, decolonized, and that they especially, you know, when we're talking about the future, you know, of our people and stuff. But also, you know, I want to talk to you about something, you know, very close to yourself and also, you know, to a lot of our people. You know, there's been a massive debate that's been going on, you know, and around marriage equality and for our mob. Sis, could you sort of, you know, let us know about your thoughts on marriage equality and, you know, like how important it is?
Yeah. So I guess first off, I think marriage is just a load of garbage in general. Yeah, I think traditionally it's been used to, like, control women and property and that sort of thing in the Western white tradition. And our marriage, the way that we did marriage as black fellas was, you know, we were in the colonial project that was destroyed as well for a lot of us. So, yeah, I think the institution is really crappy. But in saying that, at the moment, it's quite discriminatory. And that was made by John Howard. So he changed the legislation in 2004 to ensure that it was only a man and a woman who could get married, as around the world, globally, there was a push for marriage equality in other countries. So he tried to stop it here by doing that. We've kind of reached a point nationally where our politicians are, you know, no one wanted it. Queer people and lesbians and gay people, we didn't want it to go to a postal. Like, it's a bit embarrassing to have the nation.
Yeah.
Like, it's so shame job to have, like, oh, should you be able to get married on a piece of paper using the postal service? So many. When was the last time you posted a letter? I didn't even know. No one wanted it to go to that because it cost like $122 million and the government could have done it for free. Parliament could have done it for free. But anyway, this is where we are. So obviously I'm like, I don't want it to come to this, but if you can, vote yes, because, you know, it's, why deny someone else the right? But it's kind of hard to care. Like, on one hand, I really do, as a queer person, I'm like, let's get it done. But then I'm seeing so many people rally around it in a way that I've not seen for any other issue. And that's because queerness is across every strata of society. It's in every geography, class, you know, gender, race. And I just, as a black person, I'm just like, gee, it'd be nice if all you mob could care about black things in the way that you care. I would love for you all to care about black things, but that's not to say you can't care about more than one thing at a time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it does kind of hurt me a bit to just see how much support it has. But, and I really hope all my queer fam come out for the black things. But it's getting pretty nasty out there. I've copped some abuse myself, which, you know, hasn't been great fun. And I know two friends of mine had rocks thrown through their house.
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah, like, it's getting, a trans teen was, I think, choked in Tassie or Adelaide. It's getting nasty out there. And it's funny because it is the right, the far right or conservatives who are saying, let's have respectful debate. But it's hard to, I don't know how you can make homophobia respectful. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, like, there's a lot of our own mob as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, like, that are at, you know, like, the forefront of, you know, the homophobia as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, on one hand, I was talking about this, my friend Mara and I are talking about this, how black fellas just stand up for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you were like that at school, but I, like, definitely if there were like kids with disabilities who are being picked on, I was always the first one to like shape up or whatever. I love that about our mob. Mm. We're like, an injustice is an injustice and we'll fight for anyone. I really love that. You're right. I've also seen a lot of our own mob do that. And I just, you know, it makes me sad because, you know, they definitely have a gay family member or a queer family. Like, we're all related, if not we are ourselves. So it makes me sad. You know, what if there's a little teen or a little kid, you know, in their family who's seeing that sort of stuff? And we're also, like, colonized to think in that way, to take on the bigotry of the colonizer.
Mm-hmm.
We take that on ourselves, and it's up to us to dismantle that and recognize where it comes from, I think.
And, like, I guess, like, within dismantling that, do you think, you know, dismantling the way, you know, like that... We see both genders as well in terms of like how Western society perceives like what a man's role and what a woman's role is.
Yeah. So I think, and if we can look like, say, First Nations people around the world, there's definitely more than two genders. I think the way we were, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, that the way that we were colonized, our genders were too.
Yeah.
We were, our genders, like, I, you know, we, the what would we be, like how much of our gender came on a boat? Like how much of what it means to be a woman for me in 2017 is what I'm conditioned to think because of white people? Am I being socialized to be a white woman? I think about this a lot. And that also means like, you know, there's so much like patriarchal colonial stuff, like, you know, subservient women in the kitchen and blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, no, stuff that. We really have to unpack that stuff, which is really hard because it's like we're indoctrinated.
Mm-hmm.
Be whoever you want to be, totally. I say.
That's it. Just before we, in wrapping up, sis, preferred? Okay. Just in wrapping up, you know, like we had, you know, there was a death, you know, in prison. Now, of another, you know, young black fella, 22 years old, down in Tamworth, this is a reoccurrence. You know, a cousin of mine actually came back from New Zealand. He came back, his younger son is playing rugby. And he goes, I've been back for maybe 6 days. And within that, you know, he said they've had, you know, a suicide in the family, but then also, you know, a death in custody. He was like, it's like walking back, you know, into a crime scene.
Yeah.
Like the reality, you know, that, and like we can't even, you know, mourn, you know, the death of, you know, our young brother Elijah, you know, family, you know, haven't even, you know, finished mourning, you know, and these things continue to happen.
It's the third death in custody in as many months.
Yeah.
In Australia. And that's not even considering the deaths that happen outside of prison. The first year outside of prison is like, you know, a really troubling time.
Mm-hmm.
And so keeping people alive is really important. Sending strength and love to that family. It's 22 years old. And, like, what was he doing in there in the first place? Like, we are criminalized as black people. The heart breaks. And it's like even just yesterday was Wayne Fowler Morrison's
one year. Yeah.
So it's like it's like you're angry and you're sad and you're like – almost like expecting bad things to happen. But there are stuff happening. There is stuff happening nationally, isn't there?
Yeah. This Friday, there's the call, the National Day of Action to shut down youth prisons, coordinated by a lot of the Alice Springs mob. Yeah. And also I think Dylan Voller's involved in that because he lives in Alice Springs. Mm. There's like marches and rallies and whatnot all over the city. But then also I think they're calling, you know, for action also for TAME
down in Tamworth.
Down in Tamworth, but then also, like, I think around the country as well.
Yeah.
They, you know, like, they want to, you know, get out there and, you know, show solidarity, you know, with our brother. Just in wrapping up, how can people follow you, read your, you know, your articles, just...
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm on Twitter, and I'm just at Nayuka Gori, N-A-Y-U-K-A, Gori, G-O-R-R-I-E, very original. And, yeah, that's probably the best way. I'll just, yeah, hit me up on Facebook or whatever. No dudes, though, sliding in the DMs. That's not cool. Yeah, those are two things.
Okay, no, I just want to say a big thank you for coming in. Sorry I had to make you walk up that big hill in this. I think it's warm outside. I think it's hot outside. It's usually hot in the mornings nowadays. But, yeah, no, big thank you for coming on the show. Would love to have you back on again. You know, we can talk whatever you want. You know, I think, you know, that's, you know, our role as in, you know, black media is to project, you know, the thoughts and the feelings of our people around the country. So let's go to a quick song break and we'll be back.
I want so much to help you and to be there for you now, to help you from your hard times, if only I knew how. And though I know you had so much to go through life on your own, my hands and heart reach out to say, you'll never be alone. Something we can share to gently.